Hi there, and welcome to A Different Way of Seeing. Have you ever wondered how a disabled person lives their life? Join our host, Lois Drachen, as she chats to people about work, education, travel, sport, the arts, and leisure, and the tools and techniques they use to live their lives with the disability. And now, on with the show.
Hi, it's Lois. Welcome to episode 100 of the A Different Way of Seeing podcast. I cannot believe we're at episode 100. Join me after the interview and I'll be reflecting back over the last 100 episodes. Hi there, and welcome to today's episode of A Different Way of Seeing, a podcast where we talk all things disability. Today, I'm chatting to V. Masigiri, who works in the DEI space, the diversity, equity, and inclusion space. But V also works with people with disabilities to help train and empower them. We're going to dig into both of those topics a little bit deeper during our conversation today. Good morning, V. Thank you so much for joining us on A Different Way of Seeing. It's great to have you with us.
Good morning, and thank you. And thank you so much for having me. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Oh, it's great to have you with us, and we appreciate the time. So maybe we can just start off by asking you to introduce yourself to my listeners and to tell us a little of your story, your background.
Thank you. I like to see myself in the simplest way. I am Buchiro Masubigiri, and my friends call me V. I look at myself as a girl, a woman, a mother, and I am an introvert through and through. And my purpose in life, I want to help companies create inclusive workspaces where people feel that they belong, like you go to work and you feel that you belong. But how I got into the DEI space, I think it's more about my background and more about where I grew up and how I grew up. I was born in a rural village in Limpopo, and I'm a third child of four, or a third of seven, depending on how you look at it. And I'm going to explain that to you. So my parents got married and they had a child, and it was a girl. There was so much excitement. 4 years later, another child. It was a girl. So much excitement. Another 4 years, my dad was now expecting a boy, was waiting for a boy, and here I come, another girl. But I think he wanted to play the long game, so he waited another 4 years, and he gave me the name Azindini. Azindini means it doesn't bother me much. So that was my other name, and he called me that until he passed on. So then he waited another 4 years, and there was no child, and then by 5 years, no child. And then he married the second wife. And then there were two boys. And my mom got a boy 9 years after me. So that was the story. So as I was growing up, I think I wanted to know, why do families want a boy so much that they could go to this length? So I was drawn into the other. I was drawn into the diversity space at a very young age. So I've been doing diversity, equity, and inclusion work since the 1990s. So I've always been drawn to that, to find out why do families go through these many kids because they want a boy. So that is, I think, more or less my background. And then my mom gave me the name Buchiro, which means life. So I grew up with these two names, with my mom calling me a different name and my dad calling me a different name. So I've grown up with the two names, but I think the official name just became Buchiro. And as I grew up, I wanted my friends to call me V. So, Lois, that's in a nutshell my background. So that I think that's what drawed me into the diversity, equity, and inclusion. But also throughout the years, I watched as things change in the diversity space and how my dad also changed with it. And he became a different individual, not really thinking about that a boy child maybe is the ultimate goal. So it was exciting for me to see that change. And I also watched the workplace. And I'm excited about meeting people who are different from myself, who think differently, who live differently, and who do things differently. So I'm always drawn to the difference. I think that's why I entered into the DEI space and I've moved in and out of it, but my heart is always within the diversity, equity, and inclusion space.
So tell us a little bit in more detail about the actual work that you're doing. What kind of programs are you running? What kind of interventions are you holding in the organizations you work with?
I do all sorts of work in the diversity, equity, and inclusion space. That's why I said I started in the 90s. And in the 90s, we talked about gender mainstreaming in the training that we're doing, in everything that we're doing. And I've watched the space change, the names changing into gender equality, gender equity, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And now the addition of belonging. So it has changed throughout the years. And I think I've moved with it. But currently, I do all kinds. We do training, awareness raising, workshops, speaking in a variety of diversity, equity, and inclusion topics. We do online sessions that focuses on people with disabilities, and we also do online sessions on difficult conversations. But also in all our online sessions that we do, we try to be as inclusive as possible in terms of including people with different abilities. So we try by all means to understand what are the needs and try to be inclusive in those sessions. But I think what we mostly do is to raise the awareness of individuals who are not affected by the problems. Like if we're raising awareness for persons with disabilities, we would like to raise awareness for those who don't have disabilities. Because sometimes, actually most of the time, you find that people don't know. They don't know what to do. They don't know how to interact. They don't know how to even talk to persons with disabilities. So we raise awareness in that way, in a simple way, just to show them, to say someone with a disability has got a limited capacity, or maybe has got a limitation in a specific area, but they can do all the other things. And some have got one limitation, others have got two limitations, and others have got more limitations. But we need to understand and work with their strength. So for me, working with you now, it's one of those things that we would like to focus on and raise awareness, especially for those who don't have disabilities, so that they can understand the world of people with disabilities. Just see it in the way that they see it, in the way that they live, and in the way that they do things. And also try to maximize the strength that individuals have. So that's in a nutshell what we do. But we do training, facilitation, speaking, awareness raising, in topics that are around diversity, equity, and inclusion.
In order to do some of your work, you started a company, Diversity SA, Diversity South Africa. When did it start? And tell us about the aims of the company.
It started a long time ago. I started Diversity SA in 2012. I found myself without a job. And for a month or two, I frantically looked for a job. And one day, I just thought, why don't I start my own company? And then I sat down to think what company I can start. And then diversity just resonated with me. I think because I had worked before in the diversity, equity, and inclusion space. So for me, Diversity SA, it's home. It's where I feel comfortable. It's where I feel excited because that is what I want to do with my life. So it started in 2012. I've worked on it full time and then I stopped to went back to work. And I think during COVID, it became easier for me to do work for Diversity SA, even though I was working, because then I found myself with time. I wasn't going anywhere. I was sitting there. So I could plug in my laptop in the morning and plug in the other laptop in the evening. So I think for me, COVID was a blessing in a way, because I realized that, no, you don't have to go somewhere. You don't have to organize a conference. You can do something online. You can do something virtually. Then we started doing all this work online, virtually, raising awareness, facilitation, speaking, and also got a team to work on the dream. So I think COVID has been a blessing in terms of it really showed us a different way of saying, like the podcast, because we could do something, we could work on something. But my background has always been in HR, even though I've gone to diversity, equity, inclusion, went back to HR. So I've been around the topic for the longest time, trying to help companies create inclusive workspaces. So it was easier for me to work on the concept and to say, even though I'm working on the side, what is it that I can do at this moment? So we do the online sessions in the evenings, and we also do work during the weekend. So it works okay for us. So that's what we usually do, having online sessions, visual sessions, and also discussing the difficult topics that people don't feel comfortable talking about, including the issues of disabilities. Most people don't feel comfortable really sitting down and talking about it or sharing experiences with persons with disabilities.
I think that's so true. I think that the conversation around disability for too many years, it's been something that is not spoken about. It's seen almost as a taboo that shouldn't be addressed, shouldn't be confronted. So having those conversations is so important. So, it's very important.
So sometimes you meet people who don't have any disabilities, who don't know anybody with a disability, who don't have family members with a disability. And you talk about disability and it even scares them to really even talk about it because they don't understand it. They've never been socialized to understand it. They've never met someone. They've never been confronted by it. So they try to stay away. So it's something that scares them. So they don't try to understand, they just try to stay as far away as possible from it. So some people will even say, why are you talking to that person? And you're like, why am I not supposed to talk to that person? And it's because they're scared of somebody with a disability. But it's because they are scared of something that they don't know.
Yeah.
They don't know about it.
It's I don't want to use the word othering, but it is very much that it's different and uncomfortable. And often it's simply that people don't know how to approach the topic and are scared in case they say something that is taken the wrong way.
Yes. So they avoid it. They stay away from it. They'd rather not make a mistake. by just avoiding it completely.
Yeah.
So I think my interest is in there to say, let us look at each other like individuals, like someone, like right now we're doing a podcast. We are different, but we're doing a podcast and it's going to be a great podcast. So if we can try to understand people in that way to say, even if we've got limitations, you've got a limitation, I've got a limitation, we can still work on something great together. We can maximize our strength and work on something that is interesting, that is great. Yes.
You know, I was going to ask you the question about, you know, why particularly an interest in disability, but I think your passion for diversity and inclusion kind of answers that question. But most people who do have an interest in exploring the world of disability tend to have a personal connection with the topic. Do you in any way, or is this just through your work, through your network and your community?
I have got no, I've got no connections whatsoever. But I've seen with most people that they only start being concerned about persons with disability when they have a child with a disability, or they suddenly find themselves with a disability. But I think for me, the interest also came from my mom. I think my mom was an inclusive leader. As I was growing up, I watched my mom talk to everybody, include everyone who was excluded. And as I was thinking about this podcast, I also remembered a moment. I think I was 9 or 10. In my mother's house, people would visit. There were always visitors any time of the year. People went in and out all the time. And my mom usually used to have like the things that she used for visitors, like she'll have the bedding for visitors, the cutlery for visitors, the china for visitors. And we knew that each time there was a visitor, we knew what to do, we'll help her do those things and pack. And one day there was a young man from church. He had a mental disability. He came into the house. He wasn't clean. He didn't smell good. And my mom took her finest bedding. I remember looking at her and thinking, why? Because I was thinking, why this kind of a person is getting this type of the bedding and the royalty that she used to give to all her visitors. And she didn't even answer. She just looked at me. She said, he is a visitor, isn't he? And I nodded. And then she went on just to give him the best treatment. And throughout the years, I think I've watched my mom including people, including everybody. She spoke to everybody. She was that person where people wanted to come to her house because they knew that she was going to treat them well, no matter who they were, no matter what they looked like. I watched her even sometimes. She would have a visitor who's not even clean, and then she'll give her the best treatment. And then when that visitor is sleeping, she'll even wash the clothes so that in the morning she can iron and then they'll be clean the next day. So I think for me, inclusion just came out of watching her talking to people. So even where in every job that I've taken, I've talked to people who the other workers wouldn't normally talk to. I think that's why I connected with people with disabilities, because I would talk to them, I would ask them, I would listen to the stories, I would listen to their dreams and just to listen. And I realized that there is more to people than what we see from the outside. So I think my mom really influenced me in terms of being inclusive, in terms of really talking to people, ordinary people, and all the people equally, and listen to the stories, because there's always a story that is fascinating. And I've always talked to people. So I know a lot of people, and I talk to a lot of people. I think my idea of inclusion is about that, talking to people, finding their stories, and finding out what makes them tick, what makes them wake up, what makes them happy. And I do that all the time. So that, I think, it's where my interest in diversity, equity, and inclusion came from.
I think it's so important to maybe just take pause for a moment and reflect on that kind of defining moment in your life and the impact it's had. That's a wonderful story. To share and to realize that even as a young child, you saw the importance of inclusion, of belonging, of offering people a space to be heard, to be seen.
And to talk about themselves, to talk about what makes them happy, what makes them fearful, what are their dreams, you know? It's interesting. It's fascinating.
Yeah. You know, obviously, living in South Africa, we live in a country that has a very troubled past, a complicated past. My sense is often that when we're talking about the DEI space, that disability doesn't often get included in the conversations, that for obvious reasons, and it's an important concept to focus on inclusion in terms of race, in terms of gender, and other identities. But why is it that you feel that sometimes disability is not as much the focus of these conversations?
Yeah, I think as you said when you introduced that question, we've got so many things that we're dealing with. So disability tends to be put at the back of the queue because we've got so many pain points. We've got the pain point of race, we've got the pain point of danger, we've got the pain point of poverty. We've got so many things that we are dealing with, but also because disability doesn't affect the majority of the people, we tend to flag it to deal with it at a specific time. And even the companies, most companies will employ people with disabilities just because they are required to do that. But most of the time, after they've employed them, they do nothing. They absolutely do nothing. They don't introduce them into the workplace. They don't socialize everybody into the space. So we don't even raise awareness. We just put in the packing and we put people in offices and we forget about them. But I think it's because it doesn't affect most people. So then we tend to go with the popular and with the majority of the people. And if the majority of the people don't feel the pain of disability, then they're not going to do anything about it. So I think it's that. And also that we have got so many other problems that we're dealing with. We're dealing with poverty, we're dealing with the economy, we're dealing with crime, we're dealing with load shedding. And when we talk about disability, people are we'll talk about it, but then it's not a pain. So they don't really talk about it except maybe putting legislation here and there, and that's it. So, but I think it's more about that we haven't reached a stage where we can really have a conversation about it and really put it in the table to discuss it. And because we're dealing with all these other issues that keep on coming up. But I'm thinking now, I think with COVID and the lockdown and now, I think there's some awareness in terms of things like mental disabilities. I think there is some awareness, even though it's not enough. I wanted to say, if you look at first world countries, because they don't have as much problems as we have, they tend to really focus on it. The public transport will be inclusive, the buildings will be inclusive, but it's because they don't have as much problems as we have. We're still dealing with the bread and butter issues, and things of having inclusive transportation is still far. It's still far away from our discussions. Yeah,
but I'm seeing some shifts, more awareness, and I think you're very right to say about the impact of COVID in a number of ways, not just about greater spaces for conversations about mental health and the implications of mental health on the work environment. But yeah, also in some cases, I'm hoping that we'll see an increased awareness that remote working from home is possible in some industries. And I'm not saying that it's okay in possible for everyone, but that in doing that, it removes some of the challenges that do confront people with disabilities looking for employment, you know, the infrastructure, the transport, and things like that.
And the technology, it helps. It helps.
I'm curious to learn a little bit more about some of the webinars and the online sessions that you've been running to empower people in the disability space. Tell us about those.
We do a few, but the main one that we do, it's difficult conversations. It's facilitating difficult conversations. So we will select difficult conversations to talk about, mostly the kinds of things that people really don't want to talk about. But also in our sessions, we try as much as possible to be inclusive of people with disabilities. So your session that you did for the PSASA midterm convention was spot on, because I could see my mistakes in terms of the online sessions that I'm doing and the things that I'm not focusing on. But we talk about topics that people don't feel comfortable to talk about, or people have got the questions, but it's not easy to just go out and talk about. So issues about persons with disabilities, them sharing their stories, things like xenophobia, things like mental wellness, those are the topics that we usually talk about. But we also want to be inclusive in terms of having everybody in those sessions, and being online, I think it helps, because we don't have to go somewhere. What we haven't explored is catering for people with hearing disabilities. We haven't done that, but we try to cater for other disabilities in our sessions.
And I think that's one of the opportunities, the benefits of having online sessions, is that many of the software platforms that we're using, like Zoom, like Google Meet, do have captioning, at least for those who are comfortable using captioning. Obviously, those who prefer sign language interpreters, that poses a different level of complexity. It's not impossible to do. It's very possible to do. But it is something to work towards, I think. But I think that's important. So who are your conversations, your webinars, who are they aimed at in terms of your ideal audience?
It's aimed at everybody. Everybody. We haven't been able to really pinpoint, but professionals who are working, adults, it's aimed at everybody. Yeah, so it depends on the topic that we are talking about. So we talk about anything and everything that is difficult. We even have sessions on AI and how persons with disabilities can use AI and things like that. But I would say professionals working any age, that's what we are trying to target.
Great, thank you for defining.
But I think one thing I've found out in terms of working with people with disabilities in my own communities is that they still lack a lot of resources. There is poverty, there's lack of resources, there's lack of role models, there's lack of sponsors, there's lack of mentors. So you find that they reach the workspace at a later age, like late 20s or early 30s. It's only when they can get to a workspace because of these challenges of lack of resources, lack poverty, lack of role models, lack of sponsors. So it's quite a challenge. So even sometimes when we do the sessions, you find that they struggle a lot because they haven't reached that point in terms of technology, in terms of having the assistive devices for the meeting. So that's what I've noticed in most of the communities where I come from, and in most of the people that I know, they lack resources, and it's sad to see. Yeah,
and I think the lack of resources is a challenge in many sectors in our society. The added complication, of course, being that often disability has so many additional associated costs. And that becomes even more of a challenge to navigate when one's working in a situation that poverty is so, so prevalent in the country.
So it adds a another level, because if you're poor and you've got a disability, then it really complicates things. It's unlike maybe when you are middle class or you're rich and you've got a disability, then things are there, resources are there. Yeah. Even if you're middle class, even if you're saying maybe I don't have this, I don't have that, but you have people around that can support you in terms of that. But when you're poor, you're on your own. I think that's what happens in terms of that they get to the workplace much later. Because if you're in a rural area, there isn't a taxi or a bus that's going to accommodate you to take you to a school somewhere. So it means your mom has to put you at their back, and they cannot do that if, let's say, you're 16. They can do that if you're still 1, 2, 3, 4. But as you grow bigger then, and you don't have the resources, it complicates things. Mm. So they usually get to the workplace much later in life, and they start progressing from there, whereas their peers have already been working for quite a while, and they're already far ahead from them.
If you had the power to change one barrier that affects people with disabilities, what do you think that first most important barrier should, what should be the first one to work on?
I would say poverty, but I would say raising awareness as well, because sometimes when you have a disability, you just need the helping hand to move you into the right spaces, the right That's why I'm talking about sponsors and role models and resources. So I think I would work on poverty, maybe sponsoring the kids who've got disabilities from a young age, so that at least they can have that platform. They can have that someone who puts them, a step forward. So that they can take themselves there. Because you find that the kids are growing on their own. They're locked in a house. They don't have anybody. They cannot see anyone. So I would work on that first. Sponsor kids, young kids in rural villages who have got disabilities so that they can have that one step forward. Even if they don't get the same time as the others who don't have disabilities, but at least move them one step forward. So I think that's what I would do. But I think poverty it really sets a lot of kids back.
I think that's such an important thing, because those giving someone the first step, you know, as a community, people with disabilities are incredibly resilient. There's almost a natural ability to solve problems.
And yes,
giving the platform, the basis, the foundations of an effective start is such an important first step. It allows people to then grow from that, hopefully more easily.
Yeah, because if you give them the first step, then they can take the next step. But if they don't even know that there's a ladder, they need to take a step, they're not going to start because they don't know. But giving them a first step shows them, okay, there is an out. If you introduce them to role models, they can see, oh, others have done it, so it means I can do it.
Yes.
If they've got sponsors, then they know, okay, I know somebody who has done it, or I've got someone who's got my back, who's going to give me that step forward. So it helps, unlike when kids are growing on their own and they don't know nobody, they don't have any sponsors, they don't have any role models, and they also don't have resources. They can't also dream because they don't know which way to go. So once they have the basics, the foundation, then they can take themselves forward.
Yeah. Vee, if people would like to reach out to you or learn a little bit more about the work that you're doing, where can they find you online?
I am online. I am on LinkedIn. They can search me with V Masubigiri or Buchiro Masubigiri. It will take them to my profile. And they can also look for Diversity SA on LinkedIn as Diversity SA, on Facebook as Diversity SA. They're going to be able to find us there. But we also have a website, diversitysa.co.za or diversity-sa.co.za. So we are online, and most of the programs that we do, especially in difficult conversations, we advertise them on LinkedIn, and we also put a link to join. They are open to anybody. So they can join, they can find the link on LinkedIn under Diversity SA.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing that. And we'll add those into the show notes as well for anyone who is wanting to look at a text version of those links. So Vee, as a final question, what does the future hold for you and for Diversity SA?
The future, I will continue in the space, because I think this is home. This is where I'm peaceful. This is where I'm comfortable. This is where I feel the most happy. So we'll continue. And we want to be the number one diversity, equity, and inclusion company in Africa in the next 7 years. But I think our aim is just to serve more people, raise awareness of many people on issues of race, gender, disabilities, and all that. and create inclusive workspaces, normalize access, normalize disability, normalize inclusion. We shouldn't be talking about it as if it's something different. We should have conversations that are real, that are normal, like any day conversation. But what I would like other people to do is to be an ally of one person with a disability. Just be a friend, just be an ally, just be someone who speaks for people with disabilities, even if they're not in the room. And be inclusive in your language, in your training courses, in your sessions, in everything that you're doing. But for me, through Diversity SA, I would like to have more mentors, more sponsors, more allies connected with persons with disabilities, so that if one person can hold a hand of one child with a disability, I think that will be great. I think we will be able to solve the problems that we have right now, and create more allies, more people who are interested in discussing the topic of persons with disabilities, talking about it, normalizing it, creating inclusion and inclusive workspaces. I think that's what I'm looking forward to doing in the next few years.
I love that vision, and we wish you success with that. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So today, on A Different Way of Seeing, we've been chatting with V. Masabajeri about her work in the diversity, equity, and inclusion space, and also empowering people in her community who live with disabilities. V, thanks so much for taking the time to chat to us today. It's been really fantastic to learn a little bit more about the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hi, it's Lois again, and thank you for listening to episode 100 of the A Different Way of Seeing podcast. I hope you enjoyed the interview with V. You know, when I think back to the start of the show, way back in September 2018, I couldn't even visualize achieving a milestone like this. I've managed to do so much, to meet so many wonderful people over the last 100 episodes, and I will certainly continue that into the future. You know, having the privilege of sharing people's stories, talking to them about their lived experiences with disability, and raising awareness of what is possible for people with disabilities has been an incredible journey for me over the years. And I do feel privileged to have been able to share people's stories, to show listeners with disabilities new ideas, new possibilities that maybe they hadn't thought of, to help them feel less isolated with the disability that they are living with. The show, I hope, has also been a tool, a resource for the non-disabled community to normalize disability, to show people that we're just ordinary people like them who use different tools and techniques to live the lives that we choose to. And I certainly won't content, will not stop doing that as we go into the future. If I'm asked which my favorite episodes have been, that's kind of hard for me to quantify, because the truth is that every single story that I've shared has been special to me in different ways. I have learnt from every single episode. I love talking to people, hearing their stories, helping them to think through their stories, and to share their stories with the world. going into the future, I still have plenty of wonderful people to introduce to you as my listeners. There are also a couple of new projects that I'm working on at the moment that do relate to the podcast. The first of these is transcriptions of the show. It's been bothering me for a long time that there's a number of people who are unable to access my show because of the audio content. And transcriptions give people a written format so they can also gain from the information we share on the show. The other project that I'm working on is that I'm developing a membership site for listeners like you who enjoy the show and would like to be part of learning more, gaining bonus content each month, and in contributing to the show in a small way. So watch out for more details of that in the coming months. And also watch out for news of the transcriptions as those become available. I think that all that's left for me to do now is to thank you, the listeners, for tuning in, learning from the stories we share, and sharing the information to raise the profile and share the content with other people who can benefit from it. You're a very important part of the process, of the reason we do this show. And I really want to acknowledge my gratitude to each one of you for being such an important part of A Different Way of Seeing.
Thank you for listening to A Different Way of Seeing. We would love to connect with you, so find Lois at loisstrachan.com or Facebook Lois Strachan Speaker. This podcast was edited by Craig Strachan using Hindenburg Pro. Hindenburg, it's all about the story. The credits are done at Naledi Media. Naledi Media, all your vocal needs under one roof. Read by Charlie Yazzie. That's it for now. Thank you for joining us and see you next time when we bring you into the world of seeing differently.